the GD, Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Green, gardening, and environment radio, flavored with a dash of humor. Welcome to intelligent, irreverent talk about plants and the planet they grow on. And here they are, Peggy Malecki and Mike Novak.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes.
Welcome to the GD Mike Novak Show with
Peggy Malecki.
There she is, right there. And today we have Lisa Hilgenberg from the Chicago Botanic Garden. Even if you're out east, listen, we have information about seed catalogs from all over the country. It doesn't matter where you are. So I know that.
And information about finding your zone.
That's right. Well, what kind of zone? It depends on what you mean by
your finding. Your planting zone.
Your planting zone. I was thinking my Zen zone, my GD zone. Ooh. I think she already did the GD zone. Yeah, Meg already did the GD zone. Okay, we did that. Anyway.
It's been pretty cold across the country lately. So before we get to that.
This GD podcast is brought to you by the Envy Heater. The Envy Heater is a super efficient wall-mounted electric panel heater that looks great in any setting and heats up a room in just minutes.
Costing only 4 cents per hour to run, the Envy Heater is a great product for people looking to reduce their carbon footprint and save money.
Safety is a priority. They're great for homes with small children and pets because of their cool-to-the-touch design.
It's easy to install Envy, and you can do it yourself in just a few minutes.
Have more heat when and where you want it and spend less money with the Envy Heater. That's spelled E-N-V-I-H-E-A-T-E-R. Lisa Hilgenberg from the Chicago Botanic Garden. She is the horticulturist at the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden. If you go to my website, mikenovak.net, I will plug that right away because we have a ton of links where you can go to get information about seeds. And I'm not saying you need to start them today. You need to start researching them today. And this is when people, you know, some people will say, hey, I'm already behind. Won't they, Lisa?
We always feel like we're behind if we're gardeners.
Yeah, but you grow 50,000 plants at the Chicago Botanic Garden.
That's true. And the planning for 2019 is done in 2018. So we do things a year in advance. So I'm looking at 2020 right now.
So the rest of us just sort of muddle along. And when it gets to March usually May, I go, maybe I should have started those seeds. I guess I'm putting them straight in the ground now, huh? Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Beans. Yeah, they're easy to just throw some beans.
Let's see what comes out of the compost pile. Maybe that'll work.
Oh, boy. But we are so thrilled. And I say this all the time, but today I actually mean it.
I have to ding.
Thank you. Yes. And you're allowed to ding anytime you want. Just reach on over there.
Thank you. It's wonderful work. I feel like I have the best job in the world. We have sort of one of every edible plant that can be grown in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful edible landscape.
It sounds like my yard. One of everything. And except you have more than one of each thing.
But we do.
So let's say, okay, let's start there. You get a plant that you like and pick one. Give me one that you picked last, because you say you do this a year in advance. What did you pick last year? Something that you really excited about growing this season?
I'm really excited about growing Prism Kale, which is an All-American Selections winner. It's a super performer. It's sort of a very cold, hardy, curly kale that can be planted out. You know, timing is everything in the vegetable garden. So
when you say planted out,
be planted out into the garden.
Directly into the, sown directly into the garden or not?
No, transplanted into the garden.
Transplanted. Okay.
So
let's get our terms straight. You know, if you're saying planted out, that means you've grown it from seed and you're taking that seed or that plant, the starter plant, into the garden.
That's true. We have started that plant in our new production greenhouses, and we have an organic vegetable house where those plants are started, and then they're ready to go as 6 to 8 week old transplants, and then we'll plant those out in the garden between April 1st and April 15th, somewhere in that range. And Prism Kale just happens to be this beautiful dark curly green kale, and it's something that can grow in hanging baskets. It can grow really well as a filler in container designs, and then certainly as a row crop. And it's a plant that really grows throughout the season. It can be harvested well into the fall, so it will last in your garden throughout the year.
Well, I find that most kale does pretty well. Yeah, I had kale growing up until we get the first really nasty cold. And actually, I'm waiting to see if it survives the winter, because one of the things that happened is we dumped snow on the other week. And sometimes that insulates plants, and sometimes they. I've had kale survive the winter and come back.
Absolutely.
So kale is one of the.
And this is a particularly wonderful.
And that's Prism, P-R-I-Z-M.
And you say
Z-M,
because
that's right.
of the colors?
Because it's just such a dependable plant. So it's been designated as an All-American Selections.
And by the way, you should go to allamericaselections.org. And it's an independent, nonprofit organization that tests new, never-before-sold varieties for the home gardener. After a full season of anonymous trialing by volunteer horticulture professionals, they do not include me on that list, only the top garden performers are given the AAS Winner Award designation for their superior performance. And so that's one of the places you go for some of your plants.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important to us. We want things to be as ornamental as possible and certainly as productive as possible, too. So we're balancing both of those things in our vegetable beds in the fruit and vegetable garden.
And if people are watching on Facebook, I posted the link to the Kale Prism on the All America Selection site.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I need to see what that looks like, because I'm a fan of kale, even if I don't always harvest all of it. I love the way it looks.
It's an architectural plant in the garden. It's a beautiful
love
plant,
kale.
Especially when you get dinosaur kale and that kind of stuff.
Totally.
That's one of, you know, if you want to get your kids interested in gardening, tell them you're going to grow dinosaur kale and tell them that the dinosaurs ate this millions of years ago, which is not true. Or it might be. We don't know, really.
Well, and that's a little bit different type of kale. This is the Prism is sort of a curly kale, more of a Siberian type.
Yes.
And I would say that the Nero di Toscano would be the dinosaur kale.
Yeah. That's Gesundheit.
Have you heard about the Row 7 seed project? That's also an interesting project that Dan Barber is working on in New York at Stone Barn Farms. And so we'll have a few of these plants. I grew this Badger Flame Beet last year, and the marketing is so great.
Let me see that.
Badger Flame Beet.
She's got the seed packet. Badger, as in all.
As in Wisconsin Badger.
As in Honey Badger.
Because they have such a great breeding program there, and that plant is out of that breeding program. And so they're breeding for culinary use. So not only beauty, but the taste and just trials in kitchen testing as well as garden testing.
I think he did a lot with butternut squash last year, if I recall.
He has got 7 or 8 new crops that are out. There's a small little squash that sort of fits in the palm of your hand that I'm looking forward to trying as well.
And the honey badger looked at the badger flame beet and said,
"Oh, that's nasty."
Okay, and
do you see what that package says? It says it's going to reclaim the beet's or reframe the beet's dirty reputation or something. It's very funny.
Here's the thing about beets. Let's see where it says here. Vegetal sweetness of a beet without the polarizing
earthiness.
See, but that's what I like about beets. I'm sorry. The polarizing. I love the alienating earthiness of beets. And I hear these. There's some of the stations around that do this beet juice commercials, and they say, "Hey, now in black cherry." And I go, "Oh, my goodness, you're just going to ruin a beet. Beet should not taste like black cherry. A beet should taste like a beet." And if you have any, and I don't have a particularly sophisticated palate. All right. I don't. But I love beets, and I love the earthiness of beets.
I would suggest this beet. We grew it last year. They just started this program, and we grew it last year. It was, it wasn't uniform like I would have expected. So it was a little bit more inconsistent in size, and that may have had to do with conditions. But you can also harvest the greens of beets, which are so nutritious. And so if you, it's a very useful plant in the garden. The other piece for beet growing, and just sort of applicable to what we're talking about today, seed starting, is just that you can start beet seed directly in the garden, or you can transplant it as a small start that you've
it's
started
one of those
inside.
Dual ones. Not all plants work that way. Not all plants like being planted either way. Some you have to do
that's true.
In advance in your home or get them started, and some They work much better when you just sow them directly into the garden.
That's true. And there's a sort of a seed starting date calendar that I would love for people to check out on Johnny's website. Many of the seed companies have these calendars available, and you can plug in your last frost date. So for Chicago, we used May 15th. And
that's what I used.
Did you?
Yeah, I actually went and looked it up.
I'm holding up the Johnny's seed catalog right now.
She's holding up the Johnny's seed catalog. And by the way, you do not have to go to Johnny's Selected Seeds to find that. You can go to MikeNovak.net.
Right.
And I have that link. I have a bunch of other links. And basically, you go there and you just type in your zip code and you type in the average frost-free date of your area.
Right, exactly.
And, well, actually, you type in the average frost-free date. What I did is then I went to another site. I went to Dave's Garden, and I put that link there because Dave's Garden is the one that's, if you put your zip code in, it will tell you the average frost-free date. And it gives you a range. It says if the temperatures have been like this in the spring, you can expect it now. And if they haven't been, then you expect it then.
Nothing beats being a weather watcher, though, and making these, discerning sort of decisions on your own. I think that's important to know sort of the nuances of that. So we can't underestimate gardeners' knowledge. But I think so if you plug in May 14th for our last frost date, then you get the number of weeks that you're going to try to grow that plant indoors. So 4 to 6 weeks is the optimum time to grow a beet indoors. And then that would give you a range of March 19th to April 2nd to start that plant inside. So it does all the math for you. It's right here. And so then it gives you sort of a harvest, the setting out date of April 30th. And it's cool. So like tomatoes, if you look at tomatoes.
And you have this all printed up.
Good. I have it printed up, and it's just a great resource. Who can remember all of this information?
Well, that's
and,
what I was going to ask
you. I work off a calendar like this, which is the 52-week calendar. So that's how we do our production.
And that's from Ball Seed.
I can hold that one up,
that's from
too.
Ball Seed.
See, now, if I had known that, I would have put that link up there. I hope folks can see that on Facebook. But you can go to Ball Seed. Let's see if we can find that. In fact, I'm gonna.
Ball Seed has so many great plants, useful plants, plants that become All American selections, and so they have created a calendar that I use on a daily basis just to guide the planting and the timing of things. So we are in week four now, starting. We're in week five. We're already in week five.
That hurts. It hurts me.
And, of course, you've got to look again at microclimates. And
totally.
Just because you're in that zone, it might be different where you are.
That's true. I feel like closer to the lake where, we can be a little protected, but sometimes we stay colder. It just depends on, those kinds of things. And I feel like within the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden, there are little microclimates as well. I know that along that south-facing window of the glasshouse that the small space garden warms up just a little bit more than other areas out in the orchard. And one thing that I use and recommend for a tool for gardeners is this soil thermometer. So it's a great way to gauge really what's going on. Once the snow melts, pop this in the ground and take a soil temperature, and that will help guide some of your planting as well. So spinach and radish can be planted out when they're, it's just barely 40 degrees. So they can take a lot of cold in the soil. And so those would be the first crops that we could plant in the
spinach
spring.
And radish.
Spinach and radish.
Yeah.
And what about germinate. If you have a cold frame? How will that affect it?
I think a zone or two higher. So we could expect protection on 3 weeks or 4 weeks on either side of the season. So I think we can extend our season through the use of cold frames for sure. And if you have a small, it's a great place for hardening off vegetable plants as well. So if you started some things in your kitchen in a sort of a humidity dome or under lights, you could potentially start to introduce those new little seedlings into the outdoors by covering them in the cold frame.
Now, the question is, when do you start those little seedlings indoors? And that's why you have those charts, because you back time.
Exactly.
It's like being in radio. When you're getting out into a commercial break, you need to back time the music so you know when when to get out. Same thing in gardening.
That's true. Absolutely. It's about the garden math. And having something like this can really, really help guide that. So we're thinking about tomatoes in late March not necessarily in February. That will be too early. The
plants will be too big. They all want to start them now. And what happens? They get leggy and they get weird.
That's true. But you can start. This is what I suggest. If you are absolutely itching to start some plants inside, try some seeds at home. Take some home for a lettuce mix, or take some home for a basil. And you can potentially grow some microgreens right in your kitchen today. So you can start that this afternoon in a nice finely grained seed starting mix. And
we would advise using your Happy Leaf LED grow light, which is fabulous for growing those sorts of things.
Right.
In fact, I think it's time for me to get my microgreens going indoors, because I don't have any right now. And it's I'm trying to survive in my home right now with the cold weather and doing a little kitchen remodeling. But other than that, everything's
You need some microgreens.
I need some microgreens coming
in your home.
I really do.
Probably have some carry-out containers from all the food you've been carrying into your home if you're having your kitchen redone. So poke some holes in the bottom of those containers.
We have plenty of those. And we use them.
You're
those
set.
Little clamshells and other things like that, they are so perfect for growing these little seedlings.
Perfect.
So don't throw them away. Try to reuse them at least once, since we've discovered that clamshells can't actually be recycled, which just makes me crazy, but I don't want my head to explode now. The Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Lisa Hilgenberger is here. We'll be right back.
Oh, here come catalogs, here come catalogs filled with bulbs and seeds. Pictures of the perfect plants that every gardener needs. There's a lily of a color no one ever has seen. It will die within a month. Its zone is rated 15. Oh, here come catalogs, here come catalogs, you really need to spend. They'll accept my MasterCard for roses without end. There are months of cold before us, gardens withered and sealed. We'll be broke before it's March, 'cause catalogs are here. 'Cause catalogs are here. Catalogs are here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's Frozen Robins, ladies and germs. Catalogs are here. A little hard to understand the lyrics in the first part, but that's my favorite phrase where he says, there's a lily of a color no one ever has seen. It will die within a month. Its zone is rated 15. And that's a word of warning for all you people with ordering from catalogs. Right, Lisa?
Read the fine print.
Read the fine print.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. We are talking seeds because it's that time of year to at least talk, even if, and again, I don't want to panic people and say, oh my goodness, you missed the launch window. No, this is the perfect time to figure it out. And what I want to emphasize is that if you're not in Chicago, what you do is type in the name of your city and seed swap, and you'll get wherever in the country you are, you can meet up with fellow gardeners, and usually the same rules apply, and people are happy to give you their seeds because they always, oh, this is, you'll love this vegetable, you're good, or this zinnia, you really need to have this in your yard.
There's so much gardener's knowledge that is shared at a seed swap. So we're talking about successes and failures and ideas. And so that building of community, it's a very warm afternoon. Gardeners love to share. And so it's a time for us all to be.
It's a warm afternoon until we get to life-threatening cold later in the
week. It's a cold afternoon, but it's a warm thing to do. It builds community and it builds our gardening spirit. And it certainly can help with sort of this mainstream conservation of biodiversity. We're losing some of these very important vegetable varieties. And home gardeners can really make a difference in growing them out at home and saving seed and preserving
these. It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's the monarch butterfly, and I'm seeing more and more reports about the monarch. And because of the Western monarch that is disappearing, people are sounding the alarm. But the same thing with our native plants and, as you say, varieties that we used to grow in this country and around the world that are disappearing. That's why we have seed banks. And you mentioned Seed Savers Exchange and Seeds of Change. And I've got a number of those places listed at mikenovak.net, and you can write to them, you can call them, you can get their catalogs and get some of the best seed. In fact, there's about a dozen, I would say, really great catalogs in the country, and it depends what your – some people have their favorites. A lot of folks like Johnny's Selected Seeds. You use that, don't
you? We use Johnny's Selected Seeds, and it's a place where you can find not only great products and certainly organic seed, which is part of our work, but you can also find tools and growers' information and calendars. And they've worked closely with sort of the father of organic gardening, Elliot Coleman, who's mm-hmm. just sort of – he has a new edition of his book for his 30th anniversary of The New Organic Grower. And he's really the father of modern-day organic gardening.
And winter
and
gardening.
And he's in Maine and four-season gardening, right, yeah. Peggy? Yeah. And so his book is newly out again, but many of the tools that he has used on his 5-acre farm are found in the Johnny's catalog. So the broad fork and the harvest tools that he's used, some of the hoop housing ideas and equipment and techniques are found in the Johnny's catalog. So it's a great resource. But there are many others as well. And Territorial Seed Company would be another Seed Savers
yeah.
Exchange for potatoes and garlic and seed certified potatoes and garlic are great from Seed Savers Exchange.
Baker
and
then, Creek Heirloom Seeds, The Cook's Garden from Burpee, High Mowing Organic Seeds, Pine Tree Garden Seeds and Accessories. This is actually a list that you gave me 2 years ago.
Yes.
And then we mentioned Seed Savers Exchange, but my buddy, Mr. Brown Thumb, also gave me, he specializes in this, and he likes also Coosa Seed Society, Organic Seed Alliance, Terra Edibles and Salt Spring Seeds, the Cottage Gardener Seeds of Victoria, and Solana Seeds, which these are not as familiar as a lot of them.
That's true.
And I mean, I'm just saying, here's another guy's list of seed companies that he likes. And I also have a Mother Earth News article. I've linked to that. And they have the best vegetable seed companies, and they list the top 15 sustainable seed companies. Mm-hmm. And I can't get to it right now, but you can go and read that. So there's a wealth of information out there.
You know what's cool is you can come over to the fruit and vegetable garden mm-hmm. and see some of these varieties growing yeah. in the ground. And you can see how they'll fit into your garden or into your design or into your edible mm-hmm. landscape that, you know, is the movement is broadening into sort of public space gardening. So come over and look at the varieties. We have lots of different. Last year, I grew 18 different varieties of beans. That's
wow.
pretty cool to look
that
at those
is.
Sort all
right,
of
let's
all
get back to a question
together.
That I started way back yeah. at the beginning of the show when you were talking about the prism kale.
Yeah.
So you order the prism kale. How many individual prism kale plants will you put in the ground?
Well, I would say in the fruit and vegetable garden, there are hundreds of kale plants that will go into the ground.
But
of that specific variety.
Really? Of that specific variety?
I think there will be, you know, it just depends on where it is in the design. Some of the beds are very large and you know, the terrace beds, when you come over the bridge and approach the fruit and vegetable garden, have large, large plantings of 1,000 plants or more. Some of the smaller areas are where we're looking at plants and how they perform, and then we can hopefully expand them into a bigger design.
Yeah.
So each year is a little different, which is exciting. And we're planting three seasons. So we're planting cool season crops as soon as you should be planting those in your home garden. So we're extending through the season, 170-ish days of Chicago growing weather, and we're extending that season through April through November. So you'll see plants that you should be growing in your garden in the fruit and vegetable garden.
And when you think of 170 days, that's less than half the year, which is amazing that you have to cram all that in 170 days.
That's true. And that's why seed starting inside, if you can perfect that for yourself, you can really grow some unusual varieties, and you can grow some things that are very long season that are difficult to grow outside. We can get a jump start on things.
Yeah, and just with a few tools, it's not like it's a big expensive thing to do it at home.
Absolutely.
You know, the light's great, a heat mat.
A heat mat works very well for some of the summer vegetables, peppers and solanaceous crops, for sure.
Or for germination and early growth, mm-hmm. that's true.
If you heat the bottom, if you set your plastic flat or your food container on top of a heat mat, that will heat to 75 degrees or more.
What is a heat map for those who don't know? We got a minute. Okay. Yeah. What's a heat map?
A heat mat is just something that you'd find in one of these catalogs.
Yeah.
And it's a mat that you plug in to an electric outlet, and it heats sort of a rubber mat.
It's like a little heating pad, except it's much bigger.
Exactly. And you can buy them in different sizes, and you can line up your containers on top of that. And that bottom heat, it's all about temperature and moisture.
But you need to know which plants want that and which plants don't. And it's not one size fits all for all your seeds. And even in terms of germination, some seeds want light to germinate. Some seeds like darkness. Some seeds want to be covered. Some seeds want to be on top of the soil. So it's really important to get a sense of what the seed desires.
Absolutely.
And by the way, that's Lisa Hilgenberg, a horticulturist from the Chicago Botanic Garden. And she will be growing a lot of vegetables this year. And fruits. We haven't talked fruits at all. How big a deal are fruits in what you do?
Well, it's kind of half of what we do. Fruits are a big deal because if they're grown close to home, the quality is really high, and you know exactly what's been put on them. So you can control sort of the organic nature of things, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we know there are no chemicals or pesticides that are used on those plants. It's a great way to increase sort of eating from your garden every day if you can grow a few fruits as well. We have stone fruits, and which is interesting for Chicago growers to really get their heads around, that we can grow a lot of these plants very successfully in this climate. So stone fruits, apples, pears, we have all kinds of raspberry displays.
But the things you're talking about, except for strawberries, well, even strawberries because they're perennials.
Yeah.
These are either perennials or they're trees and shrubs, which is different because most of the vegetables you're going to be planting are coming from seed this year. So in terms of the fruit production, that's maintaining what's already there. Mm-hmm. So that's a different strategy. That's because pruning fruit trees is an art, a science, and a nightmare for a lot of people.
Well, it's, you know, again, there are ways to just sort of think about that. Right now, we're thinking in the winter that we're doing shape-changing pruning. We're not nipping at every little branch, but we're thinking about shape-changing winter pruning. You're right. It's straightforward. You can learn it, and it's wonderful to know how to do that, to prune so you have productive trees. It's something you can see at the Botanic Garden. There are lots of fruits that can be grown in containers. So all of the blueberries and raspberries that are small in stature can be grown just in big terracottas on your deck if you want to add fruits to your landscape. So I encourage everybody should have a fruit tree. I think in the 40s, almost every property in Chicago had a fruit tree of some kind
And it's hard to get them approved in certain municipalities like Chicago because the city freaks out if fruit is going to drop on the ground. Then they say, oh, you're attracting rats. And that may or may not be true. But even the average homeowner doesn't want them because they think it's a mess, because they're, you know, a lot of people are neatness freaks and they can't stand the idea of having something drop on the ground. Even a catalpa tree with the seed pods or something like that, they freak out over that, which is, I don't know, I find it.
I'm here to change their minds.
Good.
And the squirrels eat all the pears in my yard anyway,
That's true.
I never get any of them.
Thanks so much, Lisa Hilgenberg from the Chicago Botanic Garden, for being on the GD Mike Novak Show with
Peggy Malecki.
And as we mentioned during the program, all kinds of information at mikenovak.net, MikeNowak.net. And the reason you go there is because I am Devo.
You are green.
I are green.
We are green.
We are both green. And until next time, go green or go
home.
Statler?
Yeah, what?
Is that it?
Yes, it's over. How'd you like it?
I don't know. I slept through the whole thing.
Well, you didn't miss much.